Imagine if you woke up tomorrow, your whole body screaming in pain, and according to all the experts, there was no solution except to find acceptance. This is what happened to our guest in today's episode, Fleur Chambers. Fleur faced a diagnosis with no cure and a crossroads moment. She could either see herself as a victim or lean into the deeper lessons her pain was teaching her and use these hard-won insights to help people all around the world. Fleur is a multi-award-winning, internationally recognized meditation teacher and creator of the Happy Habit app. Her offerings have been downloaded 2 million times in 40 different countries around the world. Fleur is also the newly published author of a beautiful book called 10 Pathways, a framework for redefining happiness. In this episode, number 78 of the Lightseekers Lounge, Fleur and I discuss changing the definition of vitality to be more inclusive, how winning a business award spurred on her journey to becoming an author, using meditation as a tool for social change and the evolution of her business into a social enterprise, and how we can ask for clues and embrace synchronicities. So many beautiful moments in this conversation with the wise and wonderful Fleur Chambers. Hello, fellow seeker of light, and welcome to the Light Seekers Lounge. I'm Annie Love, and I'm a certified coach for incredible humans who want to build wholehearted businesses. I help them master their mindset, create simple strategies, and take meaningful action towards their goals in a soul-nourishing way that honors their business, their family, and most importantly, themselves. I'm also a wife and a mom to three gorgeous boys. Our parenting journey has been, well, a bit of a roller coaster. And while our family has navigated some pretty tumultuous times, I've learned just how important it is to keep seeking the light and the joy. Even in the midst of darkness, I believe that we can find light on the other side, even if the landscape is different to how we expected it to look. Here in the Light Seekers Lounge, we're going to share stories and conversations about how we create our best life, even when things feel hard. Thank you for being a light seeker with me. I am so glad you're here. Now, let's get on with the show. Hello, beautiful Fleur Chambers. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Do you know, your claim to fame is that you are only the second person other than my sister to ever have come on the podcast more than once.
Well, I feel very special and I can feel the pressure.
No pressure. Now, you and I connected through the beautiful Lisa Kordoff and work that we have both done in her communities and her programs. But yeah, you were on the podcast this time last year in episode 48, and it still remains to be one of my most highly listened to episodes, which is very lovely. And I've actually met some new clients who have said, you know, that they came to my website and then realised that you and I had done an interview and they knew of you through your work and were like, definitely need to work with you. So that's nice too.
That's awesome. I love hearing about the power of community. It's really nice.
I was thinking that, you know, in the last 12 months, you and I have probably changed a fair bit in terms of where we've been and new directions and that evolution that happens. And I want to start by asking you, how would you describe yourself?
Well, I would describe myself first and foremost as a mother and a wife. And then as a nature lover, someone who finds comfort in awe and wonder, I would call myself a lifetime student and someone that really is open to it all.
Beautiful. I love that. I wonder if that's changed at all since last year. I'll have to go back and re-listen. Do you feel like you're the same human that you were this time last year?
At my core, absolutely. But I think I have probably spent more time connecting with that deeper part of myself over the past year. So I feel like my perspective has certainly broadened, and I feel way more connected to the cycle of life, I think, than I would have this time last year.
Okay. Now, just after our interview last year, you won an Oz Mumpreneur Award for 2021 in the category of fitness and wellbeing, which is a business award. And you've recently released a beautiful book, 10 Pathways, a Framework for Redefining Happiness. Congratulations. It is beautiful. You've been very busy. I am very much looking forward to, I've got the Kindle version, but I'm very much looking forward to receiving my hard copy, which I have ordered but hasn't arrived just yet. So I can't wait. It looks beautiful.
Thank you very much. The book is certainly more beautiful in the flesh. The book is illustrated. It's got over 100 watercolour paintings that are in there, especially for the book. And so the idea was, it was really supposed to be this delightful experience that you had a cup of tea, that you sat with the sun on your face, that you snuggled up in bed on a Saturday morning and you flicked through the book. As one of the endorsements, my meditation teacher said, it'll make you feel better even if it just sits on your bedside table.
I love that.
But that was also another reason why I didn't do the audio book. I started the audio book and got two chapters in, and just knew in my body and my heart that it was never supposed to be just my voice. So I stopped that, and I just really enjoying people connecting with the felt experience of reading the book.
Yes, so beautiful. I mean, the digital version of the images are lovely, but yeah, I can't wait to touch that paper and feel it and see all those beautiful watercolors, which is also close to my heart. And I would love to chat to you a little bit more about your process of the book writing, but I want to start just with the Oz Mumpreneur Business Awards. Tell me about the process. What did you learn? How has that been for you? And what sort of impact has it had on your business?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thanks so much for asking, because when I was thinking about this, I actually realized it's really opened a lot of doors. So for a start, I've actually just finished the interviews for 5 finalists this year. So I'm up for 5 other Oz Mumpreneur Awards.
Oh, wow.
This year. So I guess one award led to the next award. But what really opened up for me was, if you're a winner, you got to apply to write a chapter in a book, which was going to be 20 chapters from women in business. And so I applied and I got in. And so I wrote one chapter for this book called Courage and Confidence. And at the end of the chapter, I thought to myself, oh, I think I've got a book in me. So I wrote a book, and then I participated in another one of their books. So I guess what that award did for me was allowed me to experiment with writing. And the publisher that I used, I also connected with through Oz Mumpreneur. So as a woman in business that works on her own, which is me, it's really nice to make the effort to connect with other people. And there's just so many opportunities to connect and to use each other's services and to celebrate. And I think the other thing that the Oz Mumpreneur Awards do is they really offer you an opportunity to get clear around what you want to talk about. So what I talked about in the interviews last year was very different to what I talked about this year. So it was a really clear example of how the conversations I'm wanting to have and the wisdom I'm wanting to impart and the conversations I'm wanting my community to have are actually changing. So that was a really nice reflection. It was less about how many more million downloads I've had and how many more courses I've created, and it was more what I want to stand for. Yeah.
Amazing. And so what sort of clarity has that led you to for your future direction, do you think?
Well, I realize that I stand for three things. And the first one is that idea that actually happiness is our capacity to walk wholeheartedly alongside our challenges. So that was something I felt really passionate about. And the book actually teaches people how, because it's one thing to say, embrace your challenges, there's a gift within the pain. But unless you provide people with a way to be curious about that, they don't know how to find the gift. So that was one thing. Another thing that became really clear over the past year is that for me, health and well-being is not an individual issue. It's actually a collective issue. And so I've become more and more vocal in how all my programs give back. So at the start of my business, I would shy away from telling people that 50% of my proceeds to this course were going to whatever charity, but I'm getting more courageous in that. And so over the past year, I've invited all my community to hold these people in their minds and hearts as they meditate. And so understanding that we meditate not only to alleviate or understand our own suffering, but to feel more connected to the world, that's a really powerful message that I want to be imparting. And then the third thing that became very clear when I wrote the book, 10 Pathways, was that there's this definition of vitality, which is people's ability to move their physical body. And how many images do we see on social media of middle-aged women completing triathlons or people in downward dog for hours on end? You know, the reality is there's 1.5 billion people in the world that experience chronic pain. There's an aging population. There's people that have got aches and pains because they've been working from home, looking at a computer screen. There's people with disabilities. And so this definition of vitality just excludes all of these people. And I guess I'm feeling more passionate about expanding what it means to feel vital. And for me, vitality, what I've learned through years of living with chronic pain, is that feeling vital has little to do with how you can move your body and more to do with how you can feel connected to the world, how you can notice synchronicities and see them as a little signpost that you're actually moving in the right direction. So how can you use the synchronicities that you see to let you feel more engaged, connected, and purposeful?
Beautiful. And that's such a... So much more inclusive, isn't it, to look at it with that reframe?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Beautiful. You very briefly touched on your chronic pain last time we had our podcast conversation, and you've written about it a little bit in your book. Can you talk about that in terms of your history and how that journey has played out in your life?
Sure. So I had mysterious pain that moved around my body for about 7 years. I went to doctors, had scans, physios, osteos, x-rays, whatever, and no one could get to the bottom of it. And so then I finally, after 7 years, received this fibromyalgia diagnosis, which is when your body sends you pain signals when there's nothing wrong, you know, with your muscles or your tissues or your ligaments. And so I went to this doctor just in hope that he would give me a pill and tell me that, you know, this pill would work and that I would be able to return to my vibrant younger self that was able to move and play with the kids and cook and drive and all of those things. And instead he said to me, there's no pill you can take for this condition. There's also no cure. All you can do is change your response to the pain. And in truth, I was enraged when he first said it, absolutely enraged. But after a while, I really took on that and explored all the different ways that I could respond to the pain. And I then created a book around this and used the example of physical pain to actually relate it to other people's pain, like pain of grief and loss, pain of unemployment, pain of not feeling worthy enough, the pain of divorce, of menopause, of COVID, or whatever. And I actually realized that there were a whole lot of similarities that no matter what pain you had, could help you live well.
I can imagine you feeling quite enraged at being told you just had to live with it and look at it in a different way and relate to it in a different way.
Yeah. And one of the things that really helped was this idea in Buddhism of first and second arrows. And so the idea of the first arrow for me is the fibromyalgia diagnosis. And then the second arrows are all the additional suffering that we place on the top of it. So, for example, when that man said to me, all you can do is change your response to the pain, what I thought to myself is, he doesn't think I'm strong enough. He thinks I was stupid for thinking I could take a pill. My husband will think I've made this whole thing up. I'm supposed to be strong. Why do I have a condition that's usually for people that have had trauma? All of this stuff. So all of these second arrows of suffering that we fire at ourselves, or when friends said things like, you won't have that condition, that's only for people who've had a tough childhood, or whatever the comments were, all those second arrows. And so I think anyone can relate to that. What is the first pain, the first arrow? And then what are all the other second arrows that you're firing? And how can you respond to those with some compassion, with some gentleness? Because when we get caught up in the second arrows, we're really protecting ourselves from feeling the first. Mm. And so how can you soften and understand those second arrows so you can actually be with the pain of the first one, because it will never go away unless you be with it.
Mm. Yeah, so important. Tell me, how was the process of writing the book for you? Was it healing?
Well, it's funny because
or was it a third arrow?
Yeah, it was. When I set out to write the book, I'm like, yeah, I'm healed. I'm healed. I'm ready to write this book. As I wrote it, I'm like, I'm still healing. I'm still healing. So I took this course called Storytelling to Heal, because I also didn't want it to be like a air your dirty laundry, show everyone your dirty undies type of book. And I didn't want to feel exposed or vulnerable, because I'm actually quite a private person. And so I worked with this woman to really allow myself to share from a place that already felt healed, and to share from a place so other people could see themselves in me. So the stories that I tell, they're not even really about me. I'm telling them so I hope other people can see themselves in me. It wasn't intended to be a memoir. So the writing of it was actually really easy. I set myself the intention just to open to this book, having never thought about writing one before. And within 4 months, the book was written. So life just offered me example after example, which I just weaved into the book, so much so that one of the chapters is dedicated to an owl that came to visit me. I have not seen the owl since. It was just there for the month that I wrote that chapter. I go looking for him. He's never reappeared.
One of those synchronicities.
Yes, absolutely. So life just opened itself up for me to write the book. And then when it came to other people reading it, I just reached next level vulnerability. My inner child just came out. There was a lot of anxiety. But again, I just think it was a process I had to go through. And I spoke to my publisher about this crippling anxiety. And she said, yes, Fleur, it's called the writer's journey. And I said, and everyone goes through this. So who knows what other people's experience is, but writing a book, there's no escaping the ebbs and flows that you have to go through.
Yeah, and, you know, like when you're you know, you're used to publishing things on digital platforms, you know, like audio or websites or social media. You can change it and you can pull it down, but you can't do that when it's in print.
And you can sort of live under the illusion when it's to do with a website or social media that you have some control over who's going to see it. Whereas if it's in a bookshelf, on a bookshelf in a bookstore, anyone who presumably doesn't know you could pick it up. And so that can feel like there's even more risk of being judged because a stranger has looked at it, not someone that sort of already knows and likes you. So I had to do a lot of energetic work around sending the book out and trusting that it would land in the minds and hearts of people who needed it.
Yeah, I love that. I think Glennon Doyle says, you know, it's our responsibility to get our pieces of art out into the world, and it's not our responsibility what people do with it or how they respond to it. But that can be hard to disattach from. So tell me, how have you celebrated this momentous achievement in your life?
Well, my favorite thing I did, which is always what I wanted, was I got beautiful copies of them with cards, and I wrote handwritten cards and I sent them out to 10 people who I really love and cherish, and they all responded really beautifully. So I did that. I really enjoyed going to my local bookstore. That's been a really nice thing to do, to have chats with the bookstore owners and to do the signings. I'm running a series at the moment and I'm reading part of my book out each time, which is also a really lovely thing. But I'm taking any pressure off around controlling the outcome, and I'm really just trying to enjoy the process.
Mm, beautiful. I love that. Tell me, what does it look like in a practical sense? You know, you've talked a little bit more about the clarity around your business, direction moving forward. What does that look like in a practical sense, and what sort of steps are you taking at the moment to make those changes?
Well, I am very keen to become a social enterprise. So a social enterprise has a certification, an Australian certification, and it guarantees that you give 50% of your profits to charity. You would know some of the really cool big ones like Thank You, Who Gives a Crap. There's also some very cool sanitary bins that also do it. And so that's really what I want to do business-wise. So I don't want to be known as a meditation app, as a book. I want to be known as a social enterprise where people know that if they buy my book, meditate with me, that they are giving back to some of the poorest communities in the world. And so what I'm thinking about at the moment is, how can I pick a charity or a cause that really relates to the work that I do? For example, the sanitary bins give back to women that menstruate, or the Who Gives a Crap helps sanitization and toilets. So what would be a charity that could be really aligned for me? And so that for what I do. And so I'm thinking about maybe education, because the Happy Habit really provides people with an opportunity to educate themselves around their inner world, around their limiting beliefs, around what makes them happy. So education could be one of them. I'm also toying with water, because I just think water is one of these really primary basic needs that is so powerful. We're all connected by water. And so I've already engaged quite a few projects in Bangladesh with water filtration systems. So that feels like something I could do, or water as in the ocean and cleaning up the ocean. So I quite like that too. So I guess because I want to be able to weave this sense of community into the meditation. So I want people to get a sense of it. So that's really what I'm thinking about at the moment. And that just feels really exciting, positioning myself in that way. It's also quite overwhelming because you have to guarantee profit and be able to give back and all of that. But it really feels like the next step for me in terms of playing a bigger game.
I love it. Who do you need to be? So maybe a tricky question. In this next evolution of your business, what does that mean for you as a human?
I think, as always, it requires me to really commit to my own meditation practice. So when I don't, then I can get consumed with the limiting beliefs and the judgments. I can think people will judge me for doing this. I can tell myself people don't want to think about people less fortunate than them when they're meditating. That'll annoy people. I can have all of those really judgy conversations with myself. So committing to my own meditation practice really allows me to step up. And then the other thing is that really trusting in life. So that noticing the synchronicities, seeing them as a sign that I'm moving in the right direction. And I guess asking life for more guidance. That's really what I need to do. I make big decisions very, very quickly. I always have. And so, for example, each morning I open myself out to life, I ask life to offer me a clue, and then I go for a walk and I'll get a very big instantaneous clue and then I will act upon that. So I just need to keep those lines of communication open.
I love that so much. It just totally aligns with how I see the world, which is so nice.
I wanted to ask you a question though. So from your...
No, sorry. I'm the interviewer. You're not allowed to ask me. No, I'm just kidding.
So for the happy habit, when you think of me and the offerings that you could engage in or the experiences you could have with the happy habit, what type of charities or causes come to mind for you? Or what would you, if you were meditating with me, what would help you feel more connected to the world, more inspired, more compassionate, like connecting with what type of causes?
That is a very good question. I suppose one that comes up for me is just thinking about mental health and, you know, I see a crisis of sorts, you know, especially with our teenagers and our young people these days. So I guess, but that's probably less on a, I don't know, that's still on a pretty big scale, but maybe different to how you meant. I do love the concept of water. I think that is a beautiful, I think that's a beautiful visual for me in terms of looking after the world in a different way. Gosh, the opportunities are endless, really, aren't there? There are lots of ways that you could connect with that bigger community.
Yeah, the mental health one is, it's very relevant, isn't it? Yeah, well, that's interesting for me to think about. So thank you for offering me that idea.
Beautiful. Well, tell me, you know, I know I would have asked you these questions 12 months ago. I mean, interested to hear whether these answers have changed much at all. But I'd love to know, how do you find joy when life feels hard?
I love that question. And it made me think about these 3 months when I had long COVID and it was pretty hard to get up out of bed. I had these heart palpitations and this extreme anxiety because of that. It was like my nervous system had just said something is not right. And so each day all I could do was this small walk along the canal, which has these old eucalyptus trees. And so before I went, almost in desperation, I would ask for a sign. Sometimes it was from the sunshine, I'd ask for a sign. Sometimes it was from the trees. Sometimes I'd just open up to life. And so then when I got the sign, a wave of joy would just wash over me, like of delight. not only for the thing that I saw, for example, dappled light or a bunch of rosellas or a parrot or cockies or whatever it was, but it's like that thing had so much more meaning because I'd asked and then I'd received. And so what heightened the experience of joy, I think, was this feeling that I'm safe. I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. I may not be enjoying this period of darkness, of long COVID, but life is still supporting me. I also was very difficult to sleep, and so I would often get up at night and I would look up at the stars. And I told a friend that, and she said, oh, I'll give you this particular spray. It's for Orion and Angelica, who are two constellations in the star, in the night sky. So every night I did that. I asked them for a safe passage to sleep. I'd look up at the stars. And in the morning, it's called a celestial kiss. It's when the light comes and there's just one star left. And so now every time I see that final star, I know it's that celestial kiss, and I just get this wave of joy. So I think when you create ritual and when you ask for help or a sign or synchronicity in your dark times and then you receive that, it's like the joy is in high definition.
Mm, so beautiful. I love that. And we all have capacity to ask for those signs, don't we, and receive those signs. But so often, you know, life becomes so busy and so noisy that we have to make space for it.
And often people say to me, but how do I know what the sign is? And that's the other part of it. So first of all, you have to ask, because it won't feel as awesome unless you ask, because then there's the receiving. Then you need to receive. Then you actually need to trust yourself in what you've received. So I had a student say to me, oh, so do you think that rainbow I saw could have been a sign? I'm like, hell yeah, that rainbow. I mean, how much more clear does it need to be? The world gave you a rainbow when you were feeling dark. So it's about trusting that sign and knowing that it doesn't have to be as beautiful as a rainbow. It could be a leaf falling that's whispering to you, you're safe to let go. It could be the sun setting that says, tomorrow's a new day. So the moments don't need to be extraordinary for them to give you a message.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And I think too, you know, we get so conditioned to switch off that intuition and that self-trust, and to only think our way through things. So it's so beautiful to make the space to receive those gifts and think, yes, that was a sign. You know, we don't have to overthink it.
And certainly one of the gifts in my chronic pain experience has been listening to my body. So on a superficial level, you feel pain. But if you sit with that sensation and you actually see it as your body communicating with you, then the messages are much more than pain. Mm-hmm. They're messages to offer yourself compassion. They're messages to soothe your inner child. They're messages to spend more time with your kids. They're messages to let go of perfectionism. So how can you receive the signs? It's like when your heart is closed off, when you're using distraction, when you're scrolling through social media because you feel a bit irritable. How can you actually stop doing that and listen to what your body, what your heart is really wanting to communicate with you? I know for me, I ignored my body for years and years. I ignored the whispers until it had no choice but to scream in chronic pain. And it's the same can be said for our heart or our intuition. Our heart sends us subtle messages all day, and then we ignore it and we get these really big conditions. So it's the listening, isn't it, that's really so important.
Yeah, absolutely. So what does looking after Fleur look like in your life?
It certainly looks like having a walk each morning. I need to start my day with that. And often I don't feel like it. Often the busy head part of me says, no, send out some emails, get those little things done, then you'll go for a walk. But no, I need to walk first. Also a lot more yoga, a lot more walks with my dog. It really is nature for me. Nature offers me a sense of inner harmony, perhaps more easily than anything else, I think.
Yeah, I love listening to podcasts and things like that, but I have taken to days where I just walk and just notice that dappled light or the heart-shaped leaf on the ground, or and it's so good for the soul, I think, to pay attention, to allow for that space.
And do you then notice when you do spend time there that you're more brave or you're more balanced, or like what is the reward for you besides just that moment of pleasure? What benefit do you notice ripple out?
I think I'm more balanced. I think, you know, I probably use my dog as an excuse to, you know, go for a walk because I know how much he loves it, but I know how good it is for me as well, just to, and, you know, some days it's just, you know, a 20-minute walk around the block kind of thing, but anything is beneficial, I think, just to move our bodies and wander and pay attention.
And it's like exercise. It feels hard at the start, but the more you learn to trust life, nature, your body, your heart, the more you'll want to come back to that. Mm. So the less the power of the mind has over you. But it does take time, and sometimes it's an effort. You have to be a little methodical about it at the start. Like there's some mornings I don't feel like going for the walk. I think I'd prefer just to smash out those four emails, but I don't. I commit to it because I know that I'll feel better afterwards. And so I guess for your audience that are maybe at the start of their journey of listening to nature or practicing self-care or living more purposefully or whatever it is, to just stick with it. And to know that the more you tap into that deeper place within you, the more easily it will be to access throughout the day.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I was also listening to this little analogy recently that talked about, you know, that frustration of having a computer that's not, that's being really slow and not doing what you need it to do. And that, you know, that process of just restarting it can bring it back to life, and then you're more productive. And I feel a bit the same about those little walks or the meditation. It's it makes the rest of the day easier when we commit to that little change, that little habit.
The other day I was feeling pretty irritable. I just sort of lots of little things going on. And I had two choices. I knew I could either meditate for 20 minutes or I could just scroll through social media and just be distracted. And I really wanted to just scroll through the social media because that felt easier, but I didn't. I meditated. And it was just incredible, the transformation. So, yeah, it... often just pausing and saying, what does my heart need right now? That can be a really useful one. So if you were feeling overwhelmed, irritable, grumpy with your kids, annoyed with your computer, whatever, and you took a few deep breaths into your heart and said, heart, what do you need right now? It would tell you the truth. It would tell you to have a cup of tea and sit out in the sun. It would tell you to meditate. It would tell you to hug your dog. It wouldn't tell you to scroll through social media.
No, not one of those things that we invest in to get anything back, social media. As much
it wouldn't tell us to wipe down the bench. That's
No, that's right. And there's that sense of guilt, really, isn't there? Like once, I don't know, I always feel like if I'm just scrolling social media, I get to the end of that scroll, which, you know, can be any time really, can't it? You lose track. And there's that sense of guilt about what I should have been doing. Whereas if I finish a meditation, I go, it was so worthwhile, and different perspective on the world after that.
Yeah.
And I know how I would rather feel. Do you have a quote or a mantra other than checking in with your heart to help you find inspiration or motivation?
Yes, I've been, well, when I had that long COVID experience, I had a mantra which I clung on to like a maniac, which was, when I notice synchronicities, I know that I'm healing. So every time I went for those walks and had a beautiful moment, I just reminded myself that I was healing. And then the one when I came out of long COVID, which I'm still using, is grace in the transitions. So when you go from sick to well, you need to offer yourself some grace. So, for example, when I went to a cafe for the first time, when I went out to dinner for the first time, I felt quite anxious. I hadn't done it in months. And so just offering myself grace. You can offer yourself grace in the tiniest of transitions, from bed to making the kitchen, to making the kids' lunch, from hopping into the car after work to picking your kids up from school. So we often fill those transitions with mindless activities like social media or whatever. And so how can you offer the transitions in your day grace? And don't expect yourself to go from being sound asleep to the best mum in the world when you're making the toast in the morning. Don't expect yourself to go from work to being a present partner or mother or child or whatever. So just offering yourself grace in those moments in between.
Beautiful. Such an important thing to remember. Now tell me what I've decided I'm not going to rename the Mama Love mixtape. I think it, you know, it works being Mama Love. What song can I add to it for you?
I wrote it down and it's in the other room, but it's a very cool, so I'll have to follow up. But it's a Ram Dass. He was one of the most famous sort of mindfulness. He brought mindfulness from the East into the West, and he died. And a very cool guy called Forrest someone has made his words into alternative songs.
Okay.
And so this song is very cool. So it's got his quotes. And one of the quotes is, "So you're not really who you think you are." And I just really like that. All of this identity we get caught up in about being the perfect mom or the perfect meditation teacher or whatever. I mean, how about if you actually just weren't any of those things and it didn't matter? And he says in this song that our job is just to sit beside the fire and every now and then just to throw something in to make sure the embers keep burning. And I like that. It doesn't matter how dark life can feel. You just got to keep a tiny little glow there and trust that if you keep just even one ember alive, that that's enough.
Mm. Yeah, important for us to just remember those little things, isn't it?
Yeah, but I will follow up with the action.
Excellent, thank you. Can you tell us what you're working on at the moment and where we can find and follow you?
Yes. Well, don't tell anyone, but I'm working on another book.
Now that you've started, can't stop.
I haven't told my husband yet. Oh no, actually, I did tell my husband, and he just said, "So much content. Where do you get it all from?" So yeah, I'm working on another book. That's very exciting. And people can find me on Instagram. I'm actually really enjoying the reels. I was resistant to them for a while, but I really enjoy just the 90-second mindful moments. That's really nice. And I think people could download my app, the Happy Habit app. You can download it for free and there's lots of awesome stuff. Or if people were interested in the book, 10 Pathways, then they could hop on my website and have a look at it there.
I love that. Thank you. Side note, would you like to share what surrender it took to have your Instagram account hacked and to start over again?
Well, I've had two moments in the last 18 months where I've had sort of my identity, that superficial identity, ripped away. So did I tell you that story about how all my possessions were burnt in a fire?
No.
Anyway, we moved house and we put everything in storage and the storage unit burnt down.
Oh, no.
So all my clothes, every letter anyone's ever written me, my report cards, letters from my grandma, everything. And so I really had to think, who am I without any of that stuff? Who am I without my clothes? Who am I without those letters my grandma wrote me? And so that was interesting. And then the same with the Instagram. So I'd like 8,000 followers. I'd worked very hard to get that. And that disappeared. And so I then had to ask myself, who am I without those Instagram followers? And the answer is the same. I'm me. I am the same person deep down, but it's very, very interesting for your ego, that Instagram one. So just got to settle for where I am. So it's all just stuff. It's all just followers. None of it really matters, does it?
Mm. Well, I think, you know, it comes back to what you said in the very beginning, that at your core you are the same human. It's just that superficial stuff, isn't it, that can change. Thank you so much for being here today to share your evolution with us, and for all of the magic that you create in the world, whether that through mindfulness or your wider community and how you're impacting the world. I love it.
Oh, thanks so much, Annie. I've loved being on here and I feel very grateful to take up the position next to your sister.
She's pretty special.
Well, I feel really grateful and I hope I haven't disappointed.
Never.
And it's been really, really nice to connect with you and I wish you all the best for the new podcast, for your new rebranding and for supporting women in new and awesome ways. I mean, how amazing for our kids just for us to have helped pave the way for a whole lot of women to be living with purpose and with passion and creating their own businesses and stuff. I think it's an amazing legacy. So well done and thank you for your contribution.
Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Light Seekers Lounge podcast. I am so grateful to have you here. If you loved the show, it would mean the world to me if you could hit subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. I would love to continue the conversation with you, so come on over and join the Light Seekers Lounge Facebook group or come say hi to me on Instagram at annielove.coach. Talk to you soon.